Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR21. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. In our series on the need for a global children's rights movement, we've talked about a lot of ways that the technology, the system, government policy, laws, all rob children of their basic rights to know their biological mother and father. We have yet to discuss in any detail one that is more, well, it's newer. It uses the technologies sometimes, and it comes in several different forms. It's surrogacy. Now, we'd say, what could be wrong with this? A childless couple can't have, and they don't want to go through all of the technology. Maybe just use a surrogate. The simplest, easiest way, but does it safeguard the rights of children? We're going to be talking about surrogacy in part 5 of our series on the need for a global rights, children's rights movement. Katie Faust joins us. She's founder and director of the children's rights organization, Them Before Us, and co-author of the new book, also called Them Before Us. Katie, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd. I'm so glad to be with you again.
So we have talked a lot about fatherlessness in the course of our conversations. We now enter the realm of motherlessness. You say it's uncharted territory. Why?
Well, we actually have a fair amount of experience with fatherlessness as a species. Fathers are not necessarily present when the baby is born, especially if they are unmarried to the child's mother. Sometimes it can die prior to the time when the child is born. In the past, if a mother died prior to the time the child was born, the baby would also die. And so we've had these sad situations where there's sometimes where children begin life fatherless. But so far in history, we don't have a time when children begin life motherless. But thanks to reproductive technologies, we are now forging that path for children in the name of progress. So biologically, children are connected to their mothers. There's no way to not have them connected to their mothers up until the time of birth. When they are born, they are literally attached to their mother by a cord, and that cord has to physically be cut. And so mother and baby are biologically required for one another. The mother is required for the baby all through those early stages of development and even right upon birth and right after birth. And then, up until the creation of formula and baby bottles, the mother's very presence was required for the baby's survival for the first several months and even years of the child's life. So mothers and babies being connected to one another almost defines what it means to be a mother and a baby in the true biological human sense of the word. The two go together. And so this idea that we can or should intentionally separate mother from baby is novel, it's dangerous, and it's something that we've never done as a species before.
What are the two forms of surrogacy?
So there is gestational surrogacy, and that is where the mother is implanted with eggs or an embryo that is not genetically related to her. And then the other one is traditional surrogacy. Traditional because, you know, if you think about supposed surrogate pregnancies, for example, in the Bible, it's obviously they could not find another woman's eggs and implant it into a surrogate. So traditionally, if surrogacy has been practiced, which honestly, it was just adultery in biblical times or some other kind of infidelity situation, like legitimately, that's kind of what it amounts to. The traditional surrogate is pregnant with her own eggs and then the sperm of the intended father.
So talk about the relationship between the gestating child to his or her birth mother even when that mother is not the child's genetic mother.
So we talked a little bit in our last interview about children created through sperm and egg donation and how those children miss out on the genetic connection with their mother or father and grow up often wondering, who is my biological parent? Well, even if the child is the genetic offspring of the two intended parents, the day the baby is born, those two adults are just two strangers among 7 billion others on the planet. It's the surrogate that the baby knows. It is her voice that they recognize. It's her body that they recognize in terms of the smell and that they long for when it comes to needing to be fed. I often will share the story of my second daughter when she was born. It was a really rough pregnancy, and it happened very fast. She and I were both kind of shaky and traumatized afterwards. I was taking a few minutes to recover. She was over on the other side of the room, absolutely wailing. And then finally, they brought her over and they put her on my chest, and I started to sing to her a song that I had sung to my first daughter, and immediately she was quiet. Why? Because she and I already had an existing bond, because I was the only thing in the world that she knew that she knew that she knew. And we say in the book that we don't put babies on the chests of random strangers so they can forge a bond. We put babies on their mother's chest because they have an existing bond. And for a child created through surrogacy, whether they are genetically related to their surrogate mother or not, that person, that adult, is the only, not just the only parent, but the only person that the child knows. And intentionally severing that bond is harmful to the child.
Why do some view surrogacy as a human rights violation?
Well, it is the buying and selling of women's bodies. We don't talk about this quite as much in the book, but it's so interesting to me that women's bodies are in hot demand these days. We have a big debate about prostitution and whether or not that should be legal, and that is the purchasing of a woman's body for the sake of sex. We have a flourishing egg donation, egg selling marketplace, because that's something specific that a woman's body can offer that you can't find anywhere else. And now we have a burgeoning market of womb rental, because that's something else that only women can provide. And so many countries throughout the world consider surrogacy to be a human rights violation because it is the purchasing and using of a woman's body for commercial purposes. But also, many do view this as the buying and selling of babies. Now, obviously, there's activists on the other side that are desperately trying to make the case that no, it's nothing like the buying and selling of children. And yet, as we reveal in the book, many of these children themselves feel as though they have been commodified and they have been bought and sold.
What do grown children of surrogacy, what kind of stories do they tell us?
Well, we don't have a whole lot right now because this is a new technology, because it has only been recently that technology has allowed us to commercially and intentionally separate children from their mothers. We don't have a whole lot of stories of grown children who are able to speak for themselves, but we do profile a couple in the book that talk about how there was harm to them when they were intentionally separated from their birth mother, and that they felt harmed by the commercial nature of the conception, and that it really impacted their sense of self, their self-worth, their self-esteem, their identity, knowing that money had changed hands, that a paycheck was responsible for them coming into being. So we do share a couple of those stories in the book. And as you can imagine, when it feels like you were brought about because of a commercial transaction, that's not necessarily something that children look back on fondly.
You say, we know that the novel practice of creating intentionally motherless children has put children at risk in terrifying new ways. Explain that, if you would, Katie.
We profile a couple cases in the book, and it really is dystopic in the most disturbing ways. You know, the first one that we discuss is a Japanese millionaire, last name Shigeta, and he was known as the baby factory dad. And he inseminated crops of surrogate mothers in a couple different countries. He purchased the egg of a white woman or white women, used his own sperm, and then impregnated dozens of surrogates. He was a single man. He was incredibly wealthy. And he said that he wanted to create hundreds of children. And so they termed him the baby factory dad, because that's what surrogacy allows you to do, is produce babies on a mass scale. There was a challenge to his parental rights because it certainly looked like child trafficking when he goes to Thailand and is funding babies in nurseries with these surrogates there, taking care of them all in one apartment, then wants to fly all of them back to Japan. But ultimately, he won parental rights to the children because there were no other legal parents around. The genetic mother was obviously not involved because her eggs had simply been purchased. The surrogate mothers, according to commercial surrogacy practices, could not be the legal mother. And so he was deemed the father of these children and is raising how many dozens? We're not sure in Japan right now. The second case that we profile is incredibly disturbing. A male couple in Australia who commissioned a surrogate born child from a woman in Russia and began abusing the child sexually within weeks of the child's birth. They had him involved in an international child trafficking ring and flew him all around the world and offered up his body to pedophiles and caught much of the abuse on tape. In that case, the judge would not even allow the jury to see the evidence because he worried that it would traumatize the jury. And then we profile another case where it was actually probably one of the well-known cases of surrogacy gone wrong, Baby Gammy, where a couple from Australia commissioned children to be created through surrogacy. A boy and a girl were conceived and implanted, and then it was discovered that the little boy had Down syndrome. And so they left the boy in Thailand and only took the girl home. Well, it turns out that the father that created those children had been a sex offender, and he was still allowed to go home with the child, with the little girl. And she remained in his custody until he passed away last year. So one of the biggest problems with the reproductive technology market in general and surrogacy specifically is that unlike the adoption world, there are no screenings and background checks for any of these commissioning parents. If you've got the money and if you can assemble sperm, egg, and womb, you get to go home with the children. And there's no background checks. There's no supervision like adoptive parents like me have to rightly undergo. And so what we've got is we've got surrogacy, which allows for these terrifying scenarios for children because we are intentionally severing this bond between mother and child.
We're talking with Katie Faust. She is founder and director of the children's rights organization, Them Before Us, and co-author of the new book, also called Them Before Us. You can purchase Them Before Us at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. When we come back, why are some countries, well, we should probably even not have to wonder after those stories, some countries are making surrogacy illegal. We'll find out why with Katie Faust on the other side. When we conclude our conversation with Katie, we'll spend hour two of Issues Etc. with Pastor Will Wheaton, looking at the word mercy in the New Testament.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Have you ever wished you could see Ad Crucem's products before buying them? Well, now you can. Ad Crucem has opened our brand new workshop in Littleton, Colorado. Come visit us and watch how we make our Christmas ornaments. Check out the quality and fabric of our church banners, or choose some greeting cards, posters, icons, or jewelry. Of course, if you can't make it to Colorado, we are still open online. For details or directions, visit adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider our beach house.
A charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858. Jesus said, "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." This is Monica Shannon, Life Coordinator for the Southern Illinois District Advocates for Life. We invite you to join your brothers and sisters in Christ for a peaceful, life-affirming prayer vigil from 10 to 11, Saturday morning, March 20th, at Planned Parenthood in Fairview Heights, Illinois. For more information, visit SIDAdvocatesforLife.com. SIDAdvocatesforLife.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about surrogacy in part five of our series, The Need for a Global Children's Rights Movement, with Katie Faust of Them Before Us. So, Katie, why are some countries making surrogacy flat out illegal?
Well, what's going on here is, to create a child through surrogacy, you have to acquire three different things: sperm, egg, and womb. Now, some couples can provide their own sperm, some can provide their own egg, some can provide both. But the thing about surrogacy is you are shopping for a womb. Now, the womb is the most expensive part of this process. It's really difficult to find a woman who is willing to rent out her body for 9.5 months, especially given the fact that surrogate pregnancies are more high risk. And so what many of these fertility clinics have discovered is that it's kind of expensive to rent the womb of white women here in the United States. It's much cheaper to rent the womb of brown women overseas. And for some of these countries, such as India or Nepal or Thailand or Cambodia, they think, wow, what a great way to allow these women to make some money. And hey, here we are helping somebody to build a family. And so many of these countries have opened their doors to surrogacy clinics who have come in, set up shop, really set up factories for implanting women and then gestating these babies, pretty much for white, wealthy foreigners. And what happens is, after a couple years, these countries, one after one, will shut their doors to all surrogacy or to at least overseas surrogate customers. Why? Because they realize that what they are actually doing is buying and selling children, and women, their women, are being exploited, often cheated, and very often put at risk. Their own health, their own future fertility, their own families put at risk, because this practice is solely focused on delivering a child product and very, very seldom about prioritizing the health and well-being of the surrogates themselves. So the path that many countries follow is they open the doors, the surrogacy clinics flow in, and within a couple years, there have been enough blatant violations of the rights and well-being of women and children that they eventually shut the doors.
Tell us about the case of reproductive rights attorney Teresa Erickson.
Yeah, so this was really incredible, really fascinating. In 2012, she was convicted of baby selling. And what she did is she had a team of surrogates and set up in Ukraine, and she would put together fertilized eggs and implant it in the surrogates. And then she would find couples and tell them, oh, hey, look, we had the surrogate pregnancy, but the original parents backed out. Do you want a baby in another couple months? Because it's almost cooked and you can have it if you can pay me $100,000 to $150,000. Now, that was successful a lot of the times, and many couples did go home with a baby who was completely unrelated to them. And yet that was a crime. But the crime wasn't that she was selling children that were not biologically related to the adults. The crime was that she was signing the contracts, the surrogacy contracts, after the child had been conceived and implanted rather than before. And so I feel like, you know, the case of Teresa Erickson is really puts a fine point on the fact that this is child trafficking. Because why was she convicted? Not because of what she was doing, but because of the timing of the contract. If she had signed those contracts before the children had been created in the lab and implanted, then it would have been a valid surrogacy contract. But because she did it 6 months later, that's baby selling. Now, to the child, it makes zero difference when a contract was signed. The fact that they are going home with unrelated adults and that there was a $150,000 price tag on their birth, it doesn't matter to them whether or not the contract was signed before or after. Those realities don't change.
Is this surrogacy industry, and it sounds like it's a lot of cottage industries, is it regulated?
No. You know, as my friend Jennifer Law often says, the fertility world is a wild west of reproductive technologies. There is very little oversight, very little regulation. A lot of times we don't track who's taking these kids home and what kind of care they're getting and, you know, what's happening to them afterwards. The rule is, in the reproductive world, if you can buy it, you can have it.
So what if a couple uses only the sperm of the intended father and the eggs of the intended mother, doesn't abort any children, doesn't freeze any children, refuses to eugenically select the most viable embryos? Is surrogacy in that case okay?
Well, let's say that they're able to do that, because I know that there are a lot of very good-hearted people who would desperately want to have a child. They would never dream of violating a child's right to life, which 93% of children created in laboratories will not be born alive for multiple reasons that we touched on in our last interview. They would never dream of using a sperm or egg donor. They want to use their own gametes and create a child through surrogacy and be the biological parents of a child. They just can't carry that child to term. Here's the problem. They still are forcing the child to bear the burden of losing their birth mother the day they are born. And I think in the world of adults, but certainly in the Christian world, no adult should be forcing a child to sacrifice for them. Rather, you know, in our world, in the world of adults, it should be the strong that sacrifices for the weak. But surrogacy always makes the weak sacrifice for the strong.
How do surrogacy and adoption differ from one another?
Well, I believe that we are going to really explore this extensively in our next interview, where we spend an entire chapter contrasting adoption and reproductive technologies, but I will give you a quick overview. The bottom line is that surrogacy is an institution centered around meeting the needs of children. The idea is that if adoption works the way it should work, every child that needs parents is going to be provided with them. In surrogacy, it's the exact opposite. Every couple who wants a baby and who can pay for it will get one, regardless of how it violates the rights of children, regardless of how many children have to die in the process. In adoption, the child is the client. In reproductive technologies, the adult is the client. And the aim is to get them a baby no matter the cost. And to be clear, it is always a cost to children, not the cost to adults. You know, we talked a little bit about how there's a lot of background checks for people like me who have adopted children, and that's how it should be, because non-biologically related adults statistically pose a much greater risk to children. Well, there's no background checks for non-biologically related adults who are going home with children that are created through surrogacy. So it's really two completely different worlds. The surrogacy world actually violates all of the best practice that we have established through adoption over the last several decades.
Katie Faust is founder and director of the children's rights organization, Them Before Us. She is co-author of the new book, also called Them Before Us. Katie, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks, Todd.
In hour two of Issues Etc., our series, The Words of Scripture, will be talking about the word mercy. Now, we had an Old Testament conversation with Pastor Will Whedon about that word last time. We'll be in the New Testament. Does this word grow? Does its meaning grow or expand when mercy now comes in human flesh? We'll talk about how we wait for God's mercy and how Paul connects his very conversion experience to God showing him mercy. All of that in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers, showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.